Play the music, please. Play the music, please.
Play the music, please.
Question smestions.
Chris Moody in Glasgow. Dear Lieutenant Ellen Ripley and Jonesy the Cat, I hope you and your incredible production team are well. I know Mark has been desperate to see the popular WTF feature return to the show, but I was wondering if we could change it slightly for 1 week only to Where is that film? Where's that? Still WTF, okay. But it's Where's that film? Someone got in touch with the show a few weeks back to ask a question about the Borderlands in 2013. I then went back and found the Good Doctor's review and thought it sounded like a good watch. Unfortunately, I struggled to find it streaming anywhere. Usually, if a film isn't showing for free on any of the streaming sites, you can rent or buy it from the Rainforest Prime app or the Fruit-based app, and I'm struggling to find it. Is it simply because it was small budget and hasn't been picked up anywhere? It's the first time I've struggled to find a film on any streaming site, so hoping you or the listening public can help. All the best, Chris Moody in Glasgow. Well, there might not be any need for you, dear listener, to reply because we got in touch with the director of that movie, Elliot Goldner. Did you know we got in touch?
I didn't.
Well, we did. We said, hey, Elliot Goldner, this is Kermit DeMayo's take here. And he says, hey.
How'd you get my number?
You can forward this answer if you like, says Elliot. So okay. This is the official word.
Okay.
It used to be on Amazon Prime, but I guess I'll have to stop pointing people there. Justwatch.com is a website I use a lot when trying to find smaller films and shows to stream legally. And according to them, it's currently available to stream for £3 on Rakuten, which admittedly sounds like a Russian hacker site, but I'm pretty sure is legit as I've used them before. To be honest, though, you have my blessing, so I'm just reading out here, you have my blessing to torrent it for free, as since the original production company went down the pan, I haven't seen a penny. Cheers, and I hope you enjoy it. And that's the word from director Elliot Goldner.
Well, that is absolutely from the horse's mouth, so fantastic.
The Borderlands is currently about to go, says Elliot, on a 10-year anniversary tour.
No, it's 10 years old.
Of selected festivals and cinemas around the UK, so worth a Google to see if it's near you, or check out the @JHandorf on Twitter for details. That's JHANDORF. By the way, so now it's Wednesday. We have already launched our new social media on Threads, assuming that everything is...
Threads.
Threads, which is, you know...
Same name, same handle as everywhere else.
It'll be Kermit DeMayo's take. That's what it'll be. Okay, so thank you for that. Dear impeachment and immorangement, says Zach Jacobson, with all the news about Mark's favourite political figure facing comeuppance, well, maybe, I was thinking about the inevitable biopic that will be heading our way that details the riches to rags to more rags story. My question is, what are the essential attributes of a great biopic? Bonus points if you avoid the obvious answer of casting. Also, who is your top pick for taking the role of the orange inmate? I'm undecided between John Lithgow and Timothée Chalamet. All the best. So two things. Looking forward to your soon-to-be-announced live shows in New Zealand. First I've
heard. Are we going to New Zealand?
I haven't heard about it, but anyway.
Excelente.
So first of all, the essential attributes of a great biopic. That's the first point.
A life story that is told in a way that is, I mean, it is possible to make I was thinking recently, you know, you remember that, you know, Electrical Life of Louis Wayne? Remember that, which was like a really, really, it was like a kind of inventive story. Mm-hmm. Or there's the Todd Haynes Bob Dylan picture in which it tells the Bob Dylan story, I'm not here, in which, you know, Cate Blanchett plays a character who may be Bob Dylan and Richard Gere plays a character. It's all these different facets of Dylan's life. Or Ken Russell's Listomania, in which Roger Daltrey plays List as the first ever rock superstar. For me, what's interesting about all of those is how can we tell the story in an adventurous way that isn't just going... plodding through the life of the stuff, you know? So I think that's important.
Okay, so now who plays Trump? I mean, Alec Baldwin does it on Saturday Night Live, doesn't he?
So no, not anymore.
But he could, he's done it comedically. Could he do it straightly?
No, I mean, there are many people who do Trump. And in fact, the guy who's been doing Trump on SNL since then is actually very good. I mean, what you'd need to do is you'd need to get... Yeah. I mean, it's hard.
Kevin Costner.
Did he do Trump?
Jeff Bridges.
I mean, you know.
Christopher Walken.
Jabba the Hutt. Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken. That would,
yeah.
That would be good, don't you think? I think that would be very good.
I refer you back to the thing that that Brian Cox said.
Which one?
The screen actor Brian Cox, as opposed to Brian Cox the scientist, who said because who was it who played Trump in the TV production? Irish actor Colm Meaney played Trump on television, and Brian Cox said, "Yeah, I felt really sorry for him." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because Trump is a non-character." And it's exactly the same thing that Bill Forsyth said about if you wrote Trump as a villain or as a, you know, as a character, people, as a fictional character, people wouldn't, but they just go, no, he's one-dimensional. He's just toady. There's nothing about him that's interesting. So in a way, the problem with playing Trump is he's such an empty, hollow sham. He's such a, you know, a grotesque caricature that it's almost impossible to find a way in to play that character realistically, because nothing you could do would match up to just the sheer seething vacuity of the Manga Mussolini, you know.
Ed says, "Dear 4 and 3, with Mark's new dieting regimen, is there anyone taking up the slack by consuming the excess pano raisin?" To which the answer is, I think the team consumed it.
The team consumed it.
But maybe only one was bought.
But today, Lily said to me, "Mark not having a pano raisin?" I went, "No." I noticed that she hadn't brought one in. So it's now been taken.
I think she had it herself.
Mm. How was yours?
Fantastic.
Is it delicious?
Yeah, you can have the crumbs if you like.
No, I don't...
Nick Martin, graphic designer. Firstly, this is not my main question, but while I was at Sixth Form College in the 90s, I worked in the kitchens at Southlands Hospital, which is in Shoreham, where the hospital radio blared out of the speakers all shift long. It was rumoured that you were once a hospital DJ there many moons ago. Is that a truth or a non-truth? M-dash or N-dash?
You were a hospital DJ, yes, where you started.
At Southlands Hospital. Well, I started at Warwick University. I probably did my first shows there, I would think.
Are there tapes of them?
Southlands Hospital, I used to record, everyone used to record themselves, they called them ego tapes. And as we're speaking, it's the 75th anniversary of the NHS, and on Greatest Hits Radio, we've done a programme about hospital radio. And I recount the tale, which actually has turned up in the Times today, about one of the times I did a ward round and asked for requests. I probably told you this before. And I found someone who was under 100 years old, and I said, "Is there a song you'd like me to play? I'm about to do a show." And bearing in mind that there's a big, long list of...
songs you can't play.
Yeah, anything to do with death or misery or, you know, therefore anything in country music.
Or blood transfusions.
Yeah, so he... And this kid said, "Yeah, could you play I Die, You Die by Gary Numan?" So I had to explain that actually probably wasn't on our list. You don't want to...
Wasn't going to happen.
...tune in. Anyway, so this can... Nick... continues. "I have a question which has been playing on my mind for some time. As a child of the 80s, I can remember many a family..." Where this question came from, I have no idea. "I can remember many a family get-together where we partook of the novelty dance, the okey-cokey, or the hokey-pokey as it is in America. I am convinced that I read somewhere many years ago that the origins of the song relate to the torture device known as the rack. I've since searched online and can't find an explanation that backs up this story." For a very good reason, Nick, by the way. The lyrics state you put your right arm in, you know, right arm out, you shake it all about. Isn't this someone trying to fight their way out of being strapped into the device? You do the okey-cokey and you turn around. Could that be the torturer turning the handle? And so on. Anyway, I think the anticipation of your expertise and knowledge of all known things, and failing that, maybe the combined knowledge of the members of the church, could put my mind at rest. Well, I think you've got this completely wrong, and all the evidence says... It comes from the 19th century, and there are various folk songs, a lot of them coming from Scotland, and there's a shaker song, which is very similar, and it is just a dance. It is just a dance. It has nothing to do with torture.
Yeah, no. The only thing I can think of that compares to that is Ring-a-Ring-a-Roses is meant to be the plague, isn't it?
Yes, that
Ring-a-Ring-a-Roses
is right.
Ring-a-Ring-a-Roses, a pocket full of tissues, and we all fall down.
Yeah, and that was sneezing was one of the first signs of the plague. Yeah. That is true. Yeah. But nothing to do with okey cokey, no. Unless someone knows something differently. Yes.
"Dear Simon, I was on the rack, and whilst I was on it, I was singing the okey cokey.
Ellie in Bristol, I'm wondering if you could help me reconnect with a fellow listener. 8 years ago, I met a man called Lawrence on a night out in Bristol. He was on a stag do, I was on a hen do, and we hit it off. Over the next few months, we saw each other off and on, but it never became an official relationship. Although we lost contact, he left a lasting impact on my life due to the fact that he introduced me to your amazing show.
Wow.
You've been a huge part of my life ever since. Fast forward to now. I'm happily married with two beautiful children. I'm definitely not looking for any extramarital activity.
So it's not a Friends Reunited thing.
However, I find myself thinking about Lawrence regularly and wanting to talk to him about things that have come up on your show. Last week, a listener wrote in about the use of film not being vegetarian, and I found myself thinking I'd love to know what Lawrence thinks about
this. Did we ever get did anybody ever? No.
No film technician got in touch.
No.
As he's both a vegan and a film lover. His number is no longer on my phone, and I've scoured social media for him, but to no avail. Would you consider reading this out and telling him that I'll be at Bell and Sebastian, presumably that's the band of the, you know, the duo, yeah, as opposed to a pub.
The television. It was a TV show,
Bell and Sebastian, in Cardiff in July. I know he's a fan and possibly still lives in Cardiff. I'll be wearing an orange dress and would love to see him. Thanks for being a consistent source of joy through some turbulent times and wonderful ones as well. Anyway, so who knows where that's going to go. Let me see where we can go from here. I'm just pitching in one of my favourite soundtracks, says Kate. Never seen the film, but found the soundtrack truly moving. Should I watch? This is very easy. My favourite film track is The Mission. Soundtrack is The Mission. Should I watch it?
Well, yeah, The Mission's definitely worth watching.
There you go.
I mean, that's... And the music is fantastic. It was played very often on my Scala show.
Is that right?
It is. One till three every Saturday.
In case you've
used to lead straight into your show, but now
I've been moved.
You've shoveled over to Sunday morning.
I kind of think that's a promotion, don't you?
I think it is. I played the Jeremy theme for you.
Do you want any listeners left? Lee in Belfast. Hello, Mark and Simon. For Simon, as someone. As a recently new grandfather, can I ask if you feel that becoming one has made you feel a significant change in your person? I've been told by some young fathers around my age that they feel like a completely different person compared to before they had their child. And I was wondering if having a relative of a further generation entering your life also leads to a similar significant change. Thank you for reading my question. Keep up the good work. Down with those who think repeatedly breaking the law makes you fit for a position of power, says Lee in Belfast. And I saw that question, and I think that the answer to this, certainly when you become a parent, you have a radical, you know, it is a life-changing moment because you realise, as is shown in the movie Parenthood, it goes on forever. Yes. There is no
end point.
Correct. But I think, speaking personally, becoming a grandparent, you're just incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I mean,
and
I don't know, because I'm not a grandparent yet, so...
No, but I mean, obviously, my grandchild is very, very smart and probably the best looking.
Have you got any photographs on your phone?
I've got 1,000, at least.
I was asking ironically.
I know, I thought I'd answer non-ironically. Let me show you a few.
It's like, you gave me a card for my birthday, which said, you know... How do you know if someone's vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you.
Yes.
It's how do you know if someone's a grandparent? Don't worry, they'll show you their phone.
A hundredfold.
And here he is dribbling. Look, it's amazing.
Anyway, you might want to hold that opinion back because when it happens to you...
No, I'm not... I'm not criticising it because the fact of the matter is, of course that's how one should be. I mean, you know, how would it be like, I've got a grandchild...
That's right. You know, sure there are some people think. But anyway, Lee, thank you. It's a very interesting question. But I think it just makes you go, oh, right, we're at that point. And you go all... you go all circle of life, basically, and you just think, okay, I am incredibly fortunate to have this person in my life.
Bill Hicks used to do a routine that he said was the routine that made that ensured that he would never be a popular comedian. The routine was called, Your Children Are Not Special.
Oh, yeah, other people's kids, not interesting, but yours, endlessly fascinating. Mike from Leafy East Ilsley in Berkshire. Heritage listener, Halloween live show veteran. We were dressed as skeletons, some of the minority who dressed up. We got a great view of Mark falling onto a fan at the beginning of the show.
Yes, I did.
I was watching BBC iPlayer this week and tuned into a programme called Rewind, which gets all nostalgic by looking back at events, news and music and film of the 1980s. Imagine my delight when in the 1989 episode, a very youthful Simon appeared telling me about the great record of Donald Wears Your Trousers and its re-release.
The wind blew loo.
That's right. It's a kind of a breakfast show thing. My question is, if you could go back to the 80s, what one place, time or event would you visit and why? Love the show, particularly
if you could go back to the 80s.
Yes, so this has to be an 80s event. What 1980s event would you go back to? A place, a time or event you could revisit?
Wow.
The only thing I can think of...
Is that something that you did, that you were at actually at the time?
And do differently? I mean, I get the feeling that Mike is saying... Is there a political event that you'd like to go back and see? I mean, the only thing that occurs to me is that the Berlin Wall, when that came down in 1989, easy to remember when, it was actually 9/11. It was the 9th of November. It was our 9/11 and not their 9/11. So,
and am I right in thinking, and this isn't a joke, didn't David Hasselhoff?
Yes. Okay. Well, so here's the thing. So my version of it is I would like to have been one of the people who got on a plane and went over to Germany to witness this incredible changing event. And when you look at the history of the Berlin Wall, there are three, this is a Wikipedia thing, there were a number of artists who played gigs by the Berlin Wall, near the Berlin Wall, that apparently were part of the general background noise to the end of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
The first one that I mentioned is David Bowie. The second one is Bruce Springsteen. And the third one is David Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff. Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. All of whom sort of played it in an apolitical sense, but just were saying things like, let's look forward to the future when there are no barriers and all that kind of stuff. And those are the three gigs that it mentions.
Wow.
But, I was on holiday at the time, and we're in Cheltenham or something like that, and thinking, wow, this is astonishing. But some people thought, wow, this is astonishing. I'm going to go over and witness it.
Yeah.
And of course, that's
No, I think that's absolutely, I think that is actually the perfect answer. I think that's great. The only thing is that I would say I would go back and watch David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, go to one of those gigs.
What a strange thing that's the case, but yeah.
Sarah Wilson, Vanguardista, late of Index as Annex, where, incidentally, the difference between a hyphen and an end dash can cost you a qualification. Now resident in PA's Pinnacle, an uncomfortable place to direct proceedings from, but a great view. I should preface my comments by the fact that I am, for various boring reasons that won't be gone into here, about 3 weeks behind in my listening to your excellent podcasts. I have a pathological need to do things in order, probably why I was attracted to Index as Annex in the first place, and have got behind. I can't skip forward and then catch up. Therefore, I have just listened to Question Smash 25 and nearly crashed the car, where I usually get to do my listening as I want to actually hear what you say rather than have it playing in the background as I do other tasks. When I heard Simon talk about my father, John Howden, although you didn't name him, you were interviewing the leader of the course that you joined in 1982. This is a BBC local training unit course. The turn of phrase that you used when describing what the instructor said to you about your interview technique after your notes fell to the floor was, "So, my father," that even my husband, not a member of the church, despite much proselytizing and the fact that he's a film nut. What is wrong with him? How can you be a film nut and not... Anyway. He recognised it. Our family, well, me, have dined out for many years on the fact that my dad trained Simon Mayo, amongst others, in his time in local radio training in the 1980s. He is well and still going, by the way, although he left radio in the late 80s and went back to the church as a vicar, although still broadcasting on local radio for a while, even interviewing you, Simon, in your Radio 1 breakfast days. He's now retired and an award-winning amateur filmmaker, although not of this parish. Again, why would he not be of this parish?
I know, it's odd.
Anyway, I do have a schmestion or two following that, but I did want an excuse to write in and say thank you for remembering Dad. He's very proud of what you've achieved, etc. Okay, so it's embarrassing best stuff. Thank you very much, Sarah. So, my schmestions. Firstly, following my remark about a pathological need to do things in order, something I have only recently recognised, which could be very frustrating and time-consuming. You can't start something until the previous thing is complete. You can't skip through books or even whole books once started. You have to finish them. You can't forward. or wind through films you're rewatching to get to the good bits. You can't come into a series halfway through. You have to watch the boring bits at the beginning. Long bracket. Is there anything that you have to do pathologically and find very frustrating?
You mean in general?
In general.
I mean, you don't mean like the obsessive compulsive thing about checking that a tap has been turned off and going back and
so,
checking
maybe.
That a tap has been turned off. And
even though you know it's frustrating behaviour.
So, well, okay, I mean, I feel embarrassed to say this, but if I'm leaving a house and I... Yeah, so if I'm leaving it...
Yeah, go on. If you're leaving
this,
your house...
This makes me sound crazier than I am.
Well, I think you might find that lots of people do exactly the same thing.
Okay, so if I'm leaving a house and I check that the taps are turned off.
Yes.
And I look at the tap and I see it's turned off and I have to put my hand under it to make sure it's not there's not water running.
Very wise. No, I think that's very sound.
Okay, fine. And then the other thing I do is that if I'm checking that I've turned something up, which is like the if you're going away,
yes,
the heating thing, you turn it to off, you know, so you're not heating your house when you're away. I have to take a photograph of it on my phone so that when I'm on the plane thinking, did I turn the thing off?
Okay, that's
I've actually got a picture of it.
That I thought you were going to say, turn the tap off, and then I have to talk to the tap and say,
No.
Tap are you off, and
no,
the tap talks
just,
back to
no,
you.
No, I just look at it, and I can see that there's no water flowing out of it, but I have to put my hand underneath it to tell
them. Taking a photograph sounds a very, very sensible.
Thank you. In that
very,
case,
very
I'm,
sensible idea.
Great.
I don't think that's pathological or anything.
Because then I just go, because the good lay professor would go, did you remember to do so-and-so? And I go, I think I did.
But I had a former colleague whose partner... was into chi and all that stuff. And what is all that?
Tai chi. Sheng shui.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, feng shui.
Feng shui.
Feng shui. Was into feng shui. And if you're into feng shui, you have to put the plug in to every basin and every bath when you leave, because otherwise...
Oh, you can't do that. That's
But if you're a feng shui person, okay, the chi falls out of the plug hole. Right? So this person's partner went around... putting all the plugs in, and then the house flooded because the chi, not only could the chi not escape, but also
nor could the water.
So anyway.
Wow.
Also, so this is Sarah's final question. Secondly, is there any story or incident that you have dined out on and are still doing so?
Oh.
Exactly.
Heaven's sake.
Well, I'll go first. Okay. And I have got permission from Child 2 to tell this story.
Yeah.
You know this story. And
okay.
I think this is okay.
Okay.
It does involve celebrities, and it involves Rachel Weisz and Colin Firth.
Okay.
And they were in a movie called The Mercy. You might remember.
It's a
true story. And I was going to do an interview for a previous incarnation of this show. And I arrived, and Colin Firth was there already, but Rachel Weisz hadn't. And I had... on Five Live, interviewed Rachel Weisz a couple of years previously, I think for My Cousin Rachel.
Right.
I checked this on the IMDb. I think that kind of works out. And I don't think I've told this story on the air before.
I don't know what it is. You said I've heard it before, but I don't know what it is.
So I had obviously said to Rachel Weisz in some kind of casual way that Child 2 wanted to be an actor and was hoping to be an actor and was going for auditions,
yes,
and all that kind of stuff. And so that had come up as part of the conversation.
That's right.
So fast forward a couple of years later, Rachel Weisz walks into the room. Colin Firth is already there sitting on the sofa reading a paper. Rachel Weisz walks in, and the first thing she says to me is, "Hello, Simon, does your daughter still want to be an actor?" And I thought,
how amazing.
First of all, that is incredible, because she didn't have anyone with her, no one to remind her of that stuff, and that she wouldn't anyway, so
yeah,
she remembered. And I said, no, she's decided very recently that she doesn't want to be an actor. And Rachel Weisz punches the air and says, "That's great news." And I went, "Oh, why?" And then before we could carry on that conversation, Colin Firth puts down the paper and says, "Why? What's good news?" And Rachel says, "Simon's daughter's decided not to be an actor." To which Colin Firth says, "Well, that is good news." Oh, okay, stop. Okay, stop. They have both won Oscars. So we have two Oscar-winning actors in the room, really thrilled that my daughter, who you've never met, has decided not to be an actor. What's going on? And I said to the PA, to the person with the film company, "This is not on my time. Don't start the clock yet."
Yeah,
because we haven't started.
Yeah.
We're not recording this. This isn't, you know.
That's great.
And they both recount stories of people they know their age who have wanted to be, who are actors wanting to be actors, and have realized too late that they're not going to be actors. And they both said, acting is a really, really tough
brutal
job.
Brutal.
And if you don't think you're going to make it, then don't. Then quit. And, you know, and they were both pleased that Child 2 had quit in good time. So I said, okay, when I finish this interview, I'm going to ring up Child 2 and tell her that two Oscar-winning actors, Rachel Weisz and Colin Firth, are both thrilled that you're not being an actor. And I did precisely that. Anyway, so that is a story. And I think it's almost like a life lesson. That's also, great. Rachel and Colin, you know, absolutely fantastic. But Rachel Weisz particularly, that she would remember that my daughter was thinking about being an actor.
So shall I tell you my story that I've done now?
Is there just the one?
No, there are many, but I'll just keep this quick. I was at the BFI and I was going to do it on stage with Ken Russell. And Ken was there with some people beforehand. And he was there with his daughter, Vicky Russell, who's great. And Vicky was there with some bloke. And we were all sitting around talking. And I end up sitting next to this bloke. And this bloke says, so what do you do? I said, oh, well, you know, I'm a film critic. And anyway, he mentions a song. I said, oh, well, you know, because I'm, you know, I play in a band as well. And he went, oh, really? You know, are they, what are they like? I said, oh, well, actually, we're you know, pretty successful. Actually, I've had quite a good musical. I mean, I was in this band, the Railtown Bottlers, you know, they were a skiffle band. Then we won the International Street Entertainers of the Year. We played at the London Palladium. We ended up playing as the house band on Danny Baker's TV show. And then this other band that I was in, this the Dodge Brothers, I mean, we've gigged a lot. You've played a lot of places, like we played the Hippodrome up in, and we actually, you know, and we recorded an album at Sun Studios. You know, it was great. It was really good. I talked for about 5 minutes. And I went,
I can't believe that, yeah.
And I went, do you play anything? And Ken went, Mark, have you met Brian Adams?
Ah. And then?
I just turned into a ball of shame and slunk off, having just told Brian Adams about my brilliant musical career. I think at that point, he was probably the biggest selling artist in the whole world.
Yes. I would still rather put on a Dodge Brothers record. No disrespect, by the way, to Brian at all. There is a section which appears to have turned up here called Movies Schmovies, which is where people are trying to work out which movies we're talking about.
Okay.
Because Eric in Dublin and 23 other people, this is because we were trying to find a film.
Yeah.
The film that Tom is looking to identify in Questions, Smestions, Movies, Schmovies, 21st of June, about the spacesuit inventor who loses his family to a satanic country club, but then saves the day thanks to the aforementioned high-tech spacesuit,
is
the wonderfully wacky 1984 TV movie Invitation to Hell.
Never seen it.
Directed by Wes Craven.
No!
It debuted in May 1984, 6 months before Craven really hit the big time with A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Seriously?
Invitation to Hell, TV movie, 1984.
Oh my word, I have to see this now. Invitation to Hell, television film. Wow. I don't think I even knew it existed. What an amazing thing.
It's now a good time to talk about our cruise. I'm just looking for a little bit of direction here. Yeah, eventually we got an answer.
Okay.
Took a while there. So this summer.
Yes.
Our cruise is slightly different due to cutbacks. Because what used to happen is the BBC used to pay for us to go on an incredible cruise around the world.
Yeah.
But now
we're with these cheapskates.
Yeah. And actually, you know, we thought it would just be more sensitive to the straitened times that we live in. We're going to have a canal cruise.
Oh, excellent.
We're going to do a canal cruise.
Navigator. Oh, what a good song. Rise, Chris Drever. Be strong.
Chris Drever from about 10 years ago. We're going up the Grand Union Canal. And what we want is suggestions of films that are shot in or around these
the Grand Union Canal
places. So basically, we're going to do a narrow boat flotilla. Everyone is welcome. We're going to leave from Strummer Lock very soon. And there are some rules which we'll come to in just a moment. But so what we want here is for our canal cruise on our narrow boat flotilla, which is going to go Westway, Notting Hill. Oh, that's okay. Can't think of anything there.
No.
Ladbroke Grove, Acton, Alperton, Perivale, Greenford, Northolt, Hayes, West Drayton. Oh, the glamour. Uxbridge, Rickmansworth, Kings Langley, Apsley, Hemel Hempstead.
I keep expecting Simon Poole to shout treaty.
Berkhamsted, Cheddington, Grove, Leighton Buzzard, Bletchley, Milton Keynes, Blisworth, Leamington Spa, Yardley, Bourneville, Central Birmingham.
That's pretty much the plot of Take Me High with Cliff Richard.
So Grand Union Canal, that's where we're going. So films, movies shot anywhere near or around. I would also like to chip in. You could also say cinema adjacent because there are films that have used the canal rather splendidly.
Yes, fantastic.
So there are rules, by the way. These come from canalboatuk.com. If you're going to join us, just some you know, to bear in mind.
Okay.
By the way, Peaky Blinders, they send a lot of weapons from Central Birmingham into London, where Tom Hardy's Jewish gang are up to no good.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds. So all that kind of stuff is perfectly acceptable. So just remember these rules, please, if you're going to join us on our narrow bloat flotilla. Number one, pass at tickover, not tick at passover. That would be something else for Tom Hardy. Pass at tickover. Always pass your engine on tickover. This is to stop the wake from your boat
disrupting the other boats. Yeah, very good.
Two, don't speed. This could affect wildlife that live on the banks of canals. Lock sharing. If the lock... Now, I'm not... So, if the lock you're going through is big enough for two boats...
Yes.
...and you see others behind you... ask them to share the lock? And then it says, and save water. But my understanding is that a canal is... It's kind of all locked.
Same amount of water,
isn't it? It's all locked
in.
The water just goes from over there to here and then over there.
That's what I thought.
And then back again. So maybe someone who knows what they're talking about, how does that save water? Because it's not flowing anywhere. It's the whole point of a canal. It doesn't flow, does it?
No.
So how is that saving water?
Although maybe the water actually has to...
doesn't go anywhere.
I don't know. Like, yeah, let's find out. Definitely find out.
Yeah. Also, leave the lock open for the next person.
Yes.
Before you fill or empty a lock, check for oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
Pass on the right. It can be quite confusing over here as cars pass
on
the
left.
However, when you're on the canal, you should pass others on the right. I'm sure they did it just to confuse everybody. Also, Mark, always remember, honk on your blind corner. Honk your horn.
On your
when
blind
you get
corner.
To a tight section with a blind corner, always give your horn a quick honk.
A quick toot.
Yes. And when following boats through tunnels, it's fine to follow another boat through a tunnel, but don't get too close.
Okay.
There are loads and loads
That's
of other
great.
Rules.
Very good.
Which we'll come to. But this is, so basically we're relying on you for cruise content from Westway to Central Birmingham on the Grand Union Canal. Oh, the joy. It's going to be so amazing. Please join us on our narrow bloat flotilla and tell us movies or TV that have been shot around those. Also, Rosie and Jim. We used to watch Rosie.
Rosie and Jim.
That was fantastic. That was all shot around there, I think.
Rule number 19, they're boats, not bumper cars.
Oh, that's disappointing. Anyway, correspondence@comedomayor.com. Thank you. There'll be a new take with you on Friday.